The Outspoken Cyclist podcast is supported by the Dodd Camera Company. An Ohio institution in photography for over 100 years, Dodd Camera has stayed right in step with the newest in digital cameras and accessories, as well as offering services such as photo restoration and large format printing. Dodd Camera stores are located in Cleveland, Dayton, Cincinnati, and Chicago. And if you don't have one in your town, you can find them online at doddcamera.com. At Dodd Camera, the focus is on you. Good afternoon and welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist, your weekly radio connection to bicycles and cycling, as well as fitness and other related topics. The Outspoken Cyclist is a radio show produced by cyclists for cyclists. And now here's your host, the Outspoken Cyclist herself, Diane Leeds.
Hello, welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Leeds, along with Tim McKenna.
Hi, Diane.
How are you?
I'm fantastic this week.
As opposed to...
Well, it's not snowing anymore.
That is true. That is true. And there's green on the trees. And I actually saw an azalea bush blooming today. I'm very happy.
The weirdest thing that I saw last week was I actually saw people on these little devices with motors that cut their grass.
Oh. We mowed our grass this week.
I did it.
Brian did it.
But it's been so long. It's nice that the grass is growing, the flowers are up, and...
Yes.
The riding weather is here.
Well, you know, it's also National Bike Month.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to May. Happy May. It's time again to help launch the National Bike Challenge. We're going to be talking again with Kimberly Clark's Rob Guskey. He handles a lot of the PR for the National Bike Challenge. This year, again, Kimberly Clark joins the LAB, the League of American Bicyclists. There's a brand new website for the first time because it used to be everything was done through Endomondo. But now it's nationalbikechallenge.org. It is open for business. All of the numbers have been reset to zero. And maybe this year Cleveland will surpass Pittsburgh in the challenge.
I think so. We got a good shot.
Yeah, right.
We have a higher draft pick than they do this year. So,
Well, I wonder why. Well, regardless, we hope everyone in the States might consider signing up and riding. It's a fun thing. And I think they have some huge goals this year. We are also going to speak with Austin McInerney. He is the executive director of NICA, the National Interscholastic Cycling Association. We first learned about NICA in October of 2012. I wanted to see how they're doing, what the organization is up to now. Austin began as a board member, and he was a coach. He became so involved in the organization, he became the executive director. At any rate, he'll tell us about the association's expansion plans, which, by the way, include middle schools for the first time, and about a special challenge grant that's been offered through Dick's Sporting Goods, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, they do a lot. I've seen a lot of money that they've given away and a lot of the grants that they're looking to still give away.
Yes. Well, this one is a 5-week challenge. So it's a hurry up. And from what I understand, it's an all or nothing grant. So if they don't raise all of the money, they don't get any of the money. So we'll let Austin tell us about it. Lastly, we're going to speak with Cherokee Shill. This is the story of the week.
Story of the month.
This might be the story of the whole summer. She is the mother of two. To keep food on the table and a roof over her children's heads, these are teenagers too. She began riding a bicycle to work, 18 miles in each direction, instead of supporting a car.
Mm-hmm.
Not a bad idea. Her commute has allowed her to become healthier. She's lost a lot of weight. She's going to tell us about that. But she's also found herself in a heap of legal trouble. She's been cited by the police 3 times for quote-unquote reckless driving on her bike. She's now in a fight for her right to ride her bicycle to work at all. The case is being played out on a local television station in Lexington, Kentucky. It might be of interest to anyone who commutes to work or is thinking about it. So hold on to your helmet. Let's go over to Wisconsin first, speak with Rob Guskey about the National Bike Challenge. Rob, welcome back to The Outspoken Cyclist.
Yes, it's good to be with you again, Diane. It's hard to believe it's been another year for us.
Really? I know. This is like the third year in a row we've spoken with you. I want to begin with the basics. I know some things have changed this year, but explain what the National Bike Challenge is and how you and Kimberly Clark are involved in it.
Okay. Well, first of all, the National Bike Challenge, it's a national event. And what we're trying to do is bring thousands of cyclists, as well as encouraging new cyclists to join together. It's free, and it's very easy, and it's a great way to get more people in your community involved in cycling and really encourage them to ride more. And our goals this year, we're stepping the bar up a bit, and our goal this year is 50,000 riders, encourage 50,000 riders to pedal a total of 30 million miles. It's a five-month period, from starting May 1st through the end of September.
So go back to the very first bike challenge. Do you remember what those original numbers were? They were very modest, as I remember, relatively speaking.
Yeah, so, I mean, way back in the days of 2008, 2009, when it started here in Kimberly-Clark, it was just an internal challenge. In 2011, we went outside the company. We worked with the state of Wisconsin with the Bike Fed here locally. And that year, our goal was 1 million miles, and we were able to exceed that. So we've grown a bit since then.
I should say so. I should say so. So this year, Kimberly Clark is your sort of the headline sponsor, and then the League of American Bicyclists is involved. Is that a new relationship?
Yeah, no. Since we've had the National Bike Challenge, and this will be the third year, we've been partnering with the League of American Bicyclists, so that's remained a constant, and specifically at Kimberly-Clark, our Scott Natural brand is the sponsor this year.
Got it. And what is that?
Yeah, so Scott Naturals, they make toilet paper, paper towels.
Everything we need to live in the United States.
Exactly, and they're particularly interested in sustainability. For example, they just brought out an interesting innovation. It's toilet paper without a core, without a paper core. There's billions and billions of cores that are used, and they're able to produce toilet paper without a core. So
wow,
it fits in with what they're.
Does it still go on a standard holder, or does that mean that like the toilet paper goes all the way to the center?
No, exactly. It goes on a standard holder, and you just use it to the last sheet, and it's done.
Cool. So you just don't have that core to give your dog anymore.
Exactly.
So is there anything new with the challenge this year? Any changes from the way you were doing it before? I mean, it's like you go outside, you jump on your bike, you get 20 points, and then for every mile, you get a point, and you start accumulating points from day one.
You've got it. So the basics there remain the same. We found that that's an excellent way to really motivate people to get out there and ride that day for at least that mile, get those 20 points. So that's been very solid, and that's worked out well. However, what we do, Diane, at the end of each year, we do a survey. Last year we had 35,000 people participating, and we get thousands of responses to the survey. And what the participants are telling us is, number one, in the past we've just had one tracking app, Endomondo, which worked great, but there's other apps out there that people are using. So we've invested in the site, and we actually have a new site this year, and it's able to accept multiple apps. So we have three apps that we can use this year, and that's a major change.
So one is probably Strava?
Unfortunately, it's not. We wanted to get them at the time their API was closed. It's now open, so we're looking at the potential of adding them in the future. But the three we have are, of course, Endomondo. We have Map My Ride. And then Moves is a very interesting one. It's a newer app from Finland, and they were just purchased, and I'm sorry, by Facebook, I believe. So it's quite
big surprise.
Yeah, quite interesting. But
those are
the three apps that we have, and each one has a little something special to offer.
Cool. So all the mileage was set to zero midnight, beginning of May 1st, May Day. But you've already had a whole bunch of people sign up since then.
Yeah, we have a warm up period, and just helps to get people signing up and get the word out. So the warm-up period ended at midnight on May 1st there, April 30th. At that time, we had already cycled a million miles, and we had just over 15,000 people wow. in the challenge.
That's so awesome.
Unfortunately, all of that went to zero, so everybody gets a nice, clear, clean start, and now we're working towards the 30 million miles.
Well, I noticed on my way to the studio just before I left that the Cleveland-Pittsburgh Challenge
Ooh.
Went up. So and I know Pittsburgh won last year, and, you know, it's like the Cleveland Browns, the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Cleveland cyclists, the Pittsburgh cyclists. Who knows? We'll see how it goes this year.
It's really close this year, and in fact, I think it's going to be very close. Cleveland looks strong coming out of the gate. Pittsburgh is ahead, but I think Cleveland's right in the thick of things.
That's cool. Who won the actual overall challenge last year?
Yeah, so Diane, the way that works is we have a couple different categories. So we have individuals, states, teams, workplaces, and communities. When you look at, for example, the larger communities, Lincoln, Nebraska won.
Wow. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, 200,000 plus population, Lincoln, Nebraska came in and won. There was a college university, Utah State University. They took first place in that division.
Wow.
Boeing did well, and
nice.
Believe it or not, Trek won in their category.
That doesn't surprise me. Trek can really muster a lot of people through their stores,
yeah.
you know, and through their bike owners. I think that's kind of cool. Are there any plans to expand the challenge into an international event?
Yes, now that's a very interesting question, Diane, and the reason. So, first of all, we've had some discussions already, preliminary discussions. One of the things you get involved with is when you start comparing numbers from one country to another, you pretty quickly find out from a U.S. perspective that we've got some, let's say, opportunities. So that could be looked at really as a good thing. In other words, hey, let's shine a light on this and help us raise the bar. But to answer your question, you know, this year it's U.S. and any companies that have U.S. employees. So there are international participants in it.
Ah, okay.
But
remember that.
As far as expanding it to other countries, I think we'll stay tuned on that. But in the next couple of years, that might be a feature that's added.
Cool. So before we wrap it up this evening, Rob, I want you to give our listeners the information they need so that they can sign up and get their little points this year and see what they can do to get their community or their team or their job or whatever into the running.
Yeah, no, we'd love to have a lot of your listeners be part of the 50,000, and it's really easy. All you need to do is go to nationalbikechallenge.org. Once you're at the site, there'll be a big button that says join. Click on that, put some information in, and you're good to go. You can use the apps. You can go in and log manually, whatever you prefer, and help us reach those 30 million miles.
Well, at the end of the challenge, we will get back with you, and we'll see how we did this year.
Okay, that sounds great.
Thanks so much.
Okay, thank you,
Diane. Have a great night.
All right, you too.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We're going to speak with Cherokee Shill. She is the mother of two. To keep food on the table and a roof over her children's heads, these are teenagers too. She began riding a bicycle to work, 18 miles in each direction, instead of supporting a car. But she's also found herself in a heap of legal trouble. She's been cited by the police 3 times for quote-unquote reckless driving on her bike. She's now in a fight for her right to ride her bicycle to work at all. The case is being played out on a local television station in Lexington, Kentucky. It might be of interest to anyone who commutes to work or is thinking about it. Good evening, Cherokee. Thank you so much for joining me on the show. I want to begin by saying to you that I'm sorry you're being put through this ordeal.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Why don't you give us a little background on who you are, what you're doing, and the case that's been brought against you?
Well, I actually can't comment on the case, but what I can tell you who I am. I'm a single mom. I have two teenagers that I support, and I work out on the north side of Lexington, which is in Fayette County, and I commute by bicycle.
So how far is that commute?
It's 18 miles one way.
And how long have you been doing that?
I've been doing that since about June of last year.
And so what started happening to you? What brought up all of the fervor and upset?
Well, the thing is that I cycled to work, and I made that choice for two reasons. One is it actually started out as an economic reason, a way to be able to afford transportation. The second reason is that the reason why I was having trouble financially is because the hours where I worked were cut back, and one of the things that went was my ability to pay for my car insurance, and I got popped for no insurance. And that's all I was ticketed for at that time. I wasn't, you know, running a red light or failing the yield at a stop sign, nothing. I was driving perfectly. I was pulled over just for no insurance. And when he ran my driver's license, when the officer ran my driver's license actually came up suspended out of New York for a speeding ticket that I had completely forgotten about. So that was a suspended license, no insurance, and he told me he could throw me in jail right then and there, but if I would sign the ticket and agree to appear in court, you know, that I would be free to go.
And when did that happen?
That happened, that was also last year.
Okay.
That was, yeah. So like I said, I had already had it in the back of my mind that the car was not my best option, that I needed to find some other way. We don't have buses or bus transportation in Jessamine County. They just recently started running LexTran, which is out of Fayette County, up to the Kohl's Shopping Center where I sit. But I still have, from here, I still have another 8 or 9 miles before I'm home.
And there's no public transportation between there and where you are right this moment?
Correct.
Huh. Interesting. You know, some other good things have happened since you started riding, too. As I remember, you have lost a lot of weight, and you are incredibly healthier.
Yes. I have. I went from a women's 22 down to a size 8.
Holy smokes, Cherokee. That's a huge difference. Huge. How cool is that? What kind of bike are you riding? I didn't even ask you that.
Okay. What I started out riding was the Sun Easy Recumbent Trike, the old style.
Yeah.
That's what I started out riding. I actually drove down to New Orleans. I bought it from a private seller in New Orleans and picked it up and drove it all the way back. And it sat in my living room for probably about a month. And then that's when I got the ticket. Decided for no insurance and suspended license.
Wow. So now you're riding a regular upright bike, though, because I saw it on the video. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I have, I went from the trike to a Univega.
Nice.
It's an 80s style road bike.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful. I love it. That actually has been given to my son now, and I was able to purchase a used Cannondale for a very good price. And the Univega is totally awesome, but it has the friction shifters.
Right.
And it makes it really tough to shift. And where I'm riding with, you know, fast moving traffic, I need to be quick on my shifting quick.
Let's get back to the fast moving traffic, because this is the issue evidently for the county attorney. And I know there are things you can't discuss about the case. What can you tell us about what's happened? What are they calling reckless driving, and why were you given 3 tickets for quote-unquote reckless driving on a bicycle?
You know, I'm really not sure why. What I know is that at all the times that I was cited, I was riding in the rightmost portion of the right-hand lane. That's what's, you know, you have three, for each lane, you have 3 sections. You have the left wheel well, you have the center, and then you have the right wheel well. And that's where I ride in the right. See, I used to have a motorcycle many years back, and so I had a motorcycle license, and I knew to ride from that in the right wheel well. So, yeah, so I have a lot of experience with different vehicles.
Well, you know, and I watched the video, and obviously somebody was filming you as you were riding, and traffic was very heavy, I would agree, but you were doing all of what I would consider the right things on your bicycle. You were taking your lane, you were using your turns, your signals, you were being a properly predictable cyclist, but obviously somebody didn't like it, and much of the prosecution is being put on a danger, whether it's real or perceived. What's your perspective? Do you feel like you're in danger? They're saying that other drivers are in danger, and it's like they're in these big cars. What is this all about?
In my opinion, I think people are not used to seeing bicycles around here. It's something that it seems odd to them, and anything different is It's like a cognitive dissonance. I think that it's just getting a negative reaction because of that. And I've seen video footage of where they have me cycling, and the first thing that I noticed is that the cars are not merging soon enough. Meaning that, like, if there's an object ahead of you, and I have a bright tail light, my tail light is 1,200 lumens. I
mean, I've seen it. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So the thing is like they know I'm there, and I'm not sure if they think that I don't. Well, actually, I can tell you, some people have like screamed at me, "Move over!" You know, there's nobody in the left lane. There's no reason for them not to merge and pass me, but they're sitting behind me, honking their horns, screaming, "Move over!" And there's the shoulder is riddled with potholes. It's got this huge continental crack going down the fog line. There's a big old rumble strip. It's covered in gravel and broken glass. And I'm like, move over where? You know, you've got a left lane. Get in it. Get in the passing lane and pass me.
This part is going on everywhere. But what's happening with you is police have actually decided to do something about it, and you may or may not have the opportunity to set some precedent here, and there are a lot of people watching your case. When I spoke with the reporter from the television station earlier today, I was told that the judge in your case has allowed you to continue riding until the pretrial in August?
Correct. The judge ruled to deny the Commonwealth motion.
Is there anything that listeners can do to help your case? Is there anything that you need for your defense?
I know, like right now, my attorney has been doing it pro bono, but that was back when it was just one citation, and this is a lot on him. You know, cause this stuff isn't inexpensive.
No, of course not.
Yeah, so people have been asking me that on Facebook, and I'm like, I'm not really sure what to do. If somebody had talked about creating a legal defense fund or opening up a bank account or something, and here's the thing, I would love to do that. I really would, but I'm kind of short on time, so I'm trying to reach out to some people to see if somebody could help me out. I don't know. I honestly don't know how to go about doing this. I've never been through anything like this before.
Well, maybe somebody listening will be able to, you know, throw a hand up and volunteer and give you a hand. I'm anxious to follow this case. So your pretrial hearing is in August, so we have the whole summer that you're going to be riding along. What are the police going to be doing? Are they going to be monitoring you or watching you or looking for you to make any mistakes?
I don't know. Here's the thing. The police here in this town, they're good people, you know. I mean, I don't really think, like, they're out to get me or anything like that.
Good.
A lot of them have just expressed concern for my safety. But the thing is that, see, the number one reason why cyclists end up in the ER is from losing control of their bike and hitting the pavement. Not from accidents with cars. So, like, 9 times out of 10, it's the cyclist who falls over, you know, hitting a pothole or having their front tire displaced by a rock or something. And that's why the laws are written in such a way to say that we don't have to ride anywhere where it's unsafe for us.
Have you considered having other people ride with you, having a sort of ride of solidarity to show that cycling is a viable means of transportation in your area, which evidently not too many people agree with at this point?
Well, the thing is right now there's this rumor going around that I'm protesting something, and I'm not. I'm just trying to get to work. And I don't want to create the sense that those people who are spreading that rumor are right. So, I mean, it's a lovely idea. I would definitely love the company, but I don't want to make anybody mad.
Yeah, I got it. I understand. Well, I hope you stay safe, stay on the road, have lots of support, and lots of luck with your case, and we'll keep following it. If something comes up, promise you'll get back in touch with me so that we can talk about it again.
Okay, thank you so much.
All right, Cherokee, have a wonderful evening. Thank you so much for being so brave. I appreciate
it. Okay, thank you.
All righty. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Cherokee Shell joined me from the Starbucks in between her home and her office near Lexington, Kentucky. Well,
it's a shame that we could probably do an article or a story like this every week. But what's amazing about this is regular, plain old, normal people step up with the courage needed to continue to do this.
I'm telling you, I watched this video that was produced by the television station. It was like 3.5 or 4 minutes. And she is riding in some heavy traffic, and she's as steady as a rock. You know, she knows how to ride her bike. She knows how to handle it. It didn't seem to me like she was causing the problem, although I understand how drivers get freaked out. And somebody used to say, and it wasn't too long ago that we had this conversation, about the reason drivers get angry is because of the fear that they're afraid they're going to do something wrong and the cyclist will get hurt. And drivers and cyclists need to learn, obviously, to coexist, but we'll have to see if that really can happen.
Right. Well, she has until August, so hopefully things will work out for her. And as you said, maybe somebody will be able to step up and just maybe give her some advice and guide her in the right direction.
That would be awesome.
On how to take care of things.
All right. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist. We are going to take a break. We'll be back with some news, and then we're going to head on out to, actually, down to Columbus, Ohio. Austin McInerney lives on the West Coast, but he happened to be in Columbus, and I was able to talk with him. He's the executive director of the National Interscholastic Cycling Association. We'll be right back on The Outspoken Cyclist.
WJCU, University Heights, from the campus of John Carroll University.
We'd like to thank our podcast sponsor, Dodd Camera, for their support of The Outspoken Cyclist. There is a close relationship between cycling and photography, and we're proud to have this family-owned business as a partner in our show. If you're in the market for photo equipment, want to learn more about taking great pictures, or maybe you're ready to launch your own YouTube channel, visit DoddCamera.com and see what Dodd Camera can do for you.
We're back on The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm Diane Lees.
And I'm Tim McKenna.
And it's time for news.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Not to be outdone, Greg LeMond stepped up this week to show how to change a flat in nothing flat. So it's not exactly how it plays out. It's a spoof on the Armstrong spoof from last week and worth watching on Vimeo. It is awesome. It is awesome. It is a Vimeo.com video, number 932-21541. It is worth it. He is at New York City Velo, NYC Velo, changing a flat for some evidently impatient cyclist. It is hilarious. Definitely worth watching.
Update on the Cleveland Velodrome.
At
the beginning of the month, they had a break-in and there was a fire. And they've been cleaning up, and I went to their Facebook page. They're still going to do a little more cleanup this weekend, but the office is back to painted and primed, and they're making progress. But the interesting thing that I found was they actually have a picture, and they've got a little bit of a story from 1939 when we had 6 days of track racing here in the city of Cleveland.
Right. We did have a track.
They got it from the Cleveland Press Collection from Cleveland State University, and it was really interesting. The interesting part was it was one of the first times that they were using television cameras, and it was televised. So it was really neat to see.
1939, huh?
To get 1939.
Wow.
I didn't think they had TV back then.
No, and cycling was huge. The six-day racing was huge, and we did, in fact, have a track here. That's very cool.
I'm sure Cleveland had a championship back then. Maybe, can we call that one instead of the teams we have now? Oh. Anyway.
I think we're going to stop this. Okay, here we go. The Spirit of Youth. Ready? This is the most beyond ridiculous story ever from the Sacramento Bee, written by Kathy Locke on May 1st. Teenage girl accused of running down 10-year-old boy in a road rage incident. Wait till you hear this. A 17-year-old Sacramento area girl was booked into juvenile hall after she allegedly ran down a 10-year-old boy who reportedly threw a water bottle at her vehicle. California Highway Patrol spokesman Officer Chad Hertzel said the incident occurred about 2 p.m. Sunday on Yellowstone Lane in the Arden Arcade area. He said a 10-year-old boy on a bicycle reportedly threw a water bottle at the Mercedes SUV she was driving. The girl made a U-turn, drove after the boy, chasing him into the front yard of a residence, and Hertzel said she drove over the boy, pinning him under the engine compartment between two tires. The boy, who suffered only minor injuries, had to be extricated by firefighters. It gets better. Witnesses at the scene reported that the girl said she intended to run down the boy, Hertzel said. By the time officers arrived, the girl's father was there and advised her not to say anything. A younger sister was with her during the incident. She seemed to show a lack of concern when she was being booked. She seemed ambivalent, Hertzel said, adding that officers were disturbed by her apparent lack of emotion. She was booked into Sacramento County Juvenile Hall on suspicion of assault with a deadly weapon. He said the boy's brother was with him at the time but was not hurt. Okay, why is a 17-year-old girl driving a Mercedes SUV with her younger sister and running down a 10-year-old boy? What is that all about?
She's the one that should have been on a bicycle, not...
Exactly! Good point! Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Okay, give me something good.
Okay, this comes from CNN Money. Across America, entrepreneurs and seasoned executives are sidelining a popular networking activity, golf, in favor of a different group sport. Cycling is the new golf when it comes to networking now.
Yes.
Now, this is interesting. We've talked about a little bit off and on in the past. But I think what we're finding is that with the networking that everyone used to do that involved scotch and a cigar and a bunch of old guys, that's kind of going away. With entrepreneurs.
And now it's PEDs. No. Yeah. Sorry.
Well, for them, yes. But I think actually now with time being as valuable as it is, and you only have so much time to get out a ride for 1 hour, you can network with everyone that you go with in the ride. You can network with one or two people if you'd like to. I think it's really interesting. And just the way that entrepreneurs now are and with millennials and everything, I don't think they're as interested in golf as much as they used to be. Now, in addition to the article here on CNN Money, I went to a golf magazine and I went to see what they had to say about it. And it was interesting, the comments at the bottom from other golfers
I'll
were
bet.
Just what we need. More old guys in spandex tight-fitting shorts and all the comments that
the
went
usual.
With that.
Yeah, did anybody ever see what golfers wear?
I've been to the golf course and I may have in the past owned a plaid pair of brightly colored
Ooh,
something or other.
You admit to that, huh?
Well, sure. Why not?
I but, know. I'm kidding.
It's great to see more people on bikes, and I think this works great when it's a warm city.
Yeah.
And maybe that'll open up the golf course a little for me, too.
Maybe.
Okay.
So that you can go out and play more?
Sure.
Okay, this is from the You Just Can't Make This Stuff Up department from Fox News. The family of a teenage bicyclist who died after being hit from behind by an SUV is now being sued for more than $1 million by the woman who was behind the wheel. Charlene Simon claims in court papers the accident caused her, quote, great pain and suffering, and accuses her victim, Brandon Majewski, 17, and his two friends of negligence, calling them incompetent bicyclists, the Toronto Sun reported Friday. The dad's attorney, Brian Cameron, told the Sun that in all his years as a lawyer, he had never seen anyone sue a child that they had killed.
It's beyond the pale, he said. He is representing the elder Majewski in a separate lawsuit that seeks $900,000 in damages from Simon. The accident happened early in the morning of October 28, 2012, on a dark rural road in Innisfil, about 55 miles north of Toronto. Brandon's two friends were both 16. One was seriously injured. The other escaped injury. They are also defendants in Simon's lawsuit, as is the county where the accident occurred. This is really just so bizarre to me. Simon, a 42-year-old mother of three, said she was going about 55 miles per hour in her Kia Sorento when she hit the boys. It was 5 miles per hour more than the speed limit, the Ottawa Citizen said. No criminal charges were ever filed against her. It's a tragedy what happened to the boys, but it's also a tragedy that's happened to Simon, her lawyer Michael Ellis told the Toronto Star. I understand their grief. I understand what they must be going through. It's awful, but my client is also living with this nightmare every day. What a bunch of baloney.
This sounds like a made-for-TV movie.
It
does. This doesn't sound like anything that actually really happens in real life.
Well, and it's interesting because the comments that were posted after this article was published also said that not only was she speeding, it was dark, it was foggy, and she was going well over the speed limit in unsafe conditions. In the meantime, she kills somebody and then she's suing the dead boy? It's killing me, this kind of stuff. I have one more, another one of those. Are you ready? You know, it's like beyond the pale. All right. Two witnesses told investigators that an Orlando police car hit a bicyclist Monday, then took off without stopping. A police report released Tuesday shows. It's like, seriously, I'm telling you, it's like television. The bicyclist identified in the report as Charles Cooperl Nazario, 36, suffered scrapes on both arms and a dislocated left shoulder that may also have been broken, the report states. Cooperl, a dentist who lives in Lake Nona, could not be reached Tuesday night. Mm-hmm. Two other drivers said they saw the police car hit the bicyclist, then take off. One of the drivers said the cruiser left the scene at a fast rate of speed. The other said the police car's turn signal was not on. Sergeant Jim Young, an Orlando police spokesperson, said officers have not identified the car that hit Cooperl or the person who was driving it. He released a statement saying that Chief Mina promised that the case would be investigated thoroughly. So I think on that note, we are going to need to head on down to Columbus, Ohio, and we're going to speak with Austin McInerney about NICA, the National Interscholastic Cycling Association. Austin, thanks for joining me on the show this evening.
Yeah, my pleasure. I'm really excited to be both in Ohio and on your show.
Well, back in October of 2012, we spoke with your predecessor, Doug Selle, about NICA and what it does. So refresh our listeners' memories about the organization and its purpose, and then we're going to move on to what's happened since 2012.
Gladly. Well, NICA is the National Interscholastic Cycling Association. We're a national nonprofit based out of California whose focus is developing high school mountain biking programs for student-athletes across the United States. And NICA provides the leadership, services, and governance for local leagues to produce high-quality mountain bike events and support every student-athlete in the development of strong body, mind, and character through efforts on the bike at the school. And fundamentally, this program, our goal is to make cycling a mainstream sport in schools, just like football, baseball, and everything else.
Hear, hear.
Yeah.
I'm for that. I'm definitely for that. You know, we spoke with Doug Peterson, who's the coach at Marion University, and they have a very successful cycling program at that level. But let's talk more about NICA. So how did you get involved?
Yeah. Well, back in 2003, you know, I was living in Berkeley, California, right by the University of California, Berkeley. And I've been a cyclist for, you know, since I was a kid and raced a bit, but nothing really like high-level pros. You know, I just was an expert class mountain biker, dabbled in cross and some road racing and just loved bicycling. And so back in 2003, a good friend of mine who is a professional on the Luna women's pro team, she went out on the Berkeley High team ride and called me up afterwards and said, you know, Austin, this high school's got a mountain bike club, and I think you'd be really good at it. You should go check it out. And so I started riding with the team then, and the founding coach of that team, Matt Fritzinger, quit teaching to start the NorCal High School League because he saw a need to really create mountain bike races that were for the kids and only for the kids, as opposed to kids just showing up at adult races and sort of being an afterthought in the promoter's eyes. So he created this program, and I was involved from the early time. It took off in the mid-2000s there, 2004 or 5, got a league going, about 100 kids. It started to grow naturally. He quit teaching to be full-time, and he incorporated it and made it a nonprofit. And I was on the initial board of directors for that program, and it grew and grew considerably to the point that in 2008, we thought, you know, we ought to be able to replicate this. Let's try doing a Southern California league. And I wrote a grant request to the Easton Sports Foundation, and we received a very generous grant, which enabled us to launch the Southern California High School League, and then quickly thereafter the Colorado High School League. And NICA was incorporated in 2009 to take the movement nationwide, and it's blown up since then, and we'll get into that a little more, I'm sure.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that. When we talked to Doug back in 2012, there were two leagues in California and eight others around the country.
Correct.
Has that changed?
Yes, it has changed. We've been
surprise.
On an upward trajectory here. As of right now, we have 13 leagues in 12 states, because, like you said, California is split in two just because of its sheer size and the sheer number of kids participating. The NorCal League has right around 800 registered students participating from, over 60 high schools. And Southern California is just a little bit behind that in numbers. So, there's over 1,300 students participating in California alone. So we're at 13 leagues across the country. Just a few weeks back at the Sea Otter event, and we announced those two newest leagues, which are Virginia in Alabama. And so they're in a sort of a ramp-up phase now. Like I said, I'm on a week tour here of coach training. We start these efforts off with coach trainings, which we call leader summits, and they're a weekend-long program to give folks the skills and enough background in order to get programs going at individual schools. And then it takes time and grows from there. So we're looking into the future. Our goal is to be, what we say, coast to coast by 2020, and we're definitely well on the way there with 25% of the country now providing high school cycling opportunities. And we look to add on, depending on our funding availability, at least one, if not two to three new leagues a year.
Wow, that is awesome. That's just awesome.
Yeah, thank
so
you.
How old are the kids who participate? What is the early age to the, what is the age
range?
Well,
we started focusing on high school students, so 9th through 12th grade. So, 14 to 15-year-olds to 18-year-olds. But we, after a couple years, saw a huge demand in the middle school age groups, the 6th, 7th, and 8th graders. And so this year, we've done a pilot program in our Minnesota and Southern California League to allow middle schoolers to form clubs and working under a licensed coach to learn skills and really learn about cycling in a fun way. And that's working. And in SoCal, they are allowing middle schoolers to actually participate in middle school only races that are held on the same day as the high school event, and they're shorter courses, and it's really about the experience and being out there and giving the middle schoolers an experience of seeing the high school race and hopefully becoming inspired to want to be on their high school teams. And it's very successful. They have just under 100 middle schoolers participating now in the SoCal program, and that was with very little outreach and sort of recruitment. And so we are setting up a way now that leagues will choose whether or not they want to provide middle school races, but all leagues are able to have middle schoolers form clubs as long as they have a coach who's gone through our training program. So I'm looking into the future here and thinking middle school cycling in an organized way under our leadership will take off and will hopefully start giving younger kids the opportunity to learn about biking and integrate it into their lives and become lifelong cyclists.
Which is, of course, what we really want to see, cycling
Correct.
At an early age. Tell me a little bit about the kids who join. You know, the first thing that comes to mind is equipment. Cycling is not a super cheap sport. It's not like you can just throw on a pair of sneakers and go running.
Ball and you hit the grass.
So how do some less advantaged kids get involved, and how is equipment supplied to them? Is that happening?
Sure. Yes, it is.
Oh, good.
And it's definitely a focus of our efforts. You know, I mentioned that we are working hard to develop strong body, mind, and character. There's two other real focuses of our program, which is inclusivity. That means everyone participates. No one sits on the bench. Our teams do not have tryouts, so we're not just looking for elite or, you know, talented cyclists. It's really about kids who want to commit to the training schedule and who are willing to work in a team environment. Then they're given the opportunity to ride. And the other part of that is equality. All kids are treated equal. You know, we don't just focus on the fast kids. Focus on everyone equally, and boys and girls. Teams are comprised of both boys and girls, and the overall team scoring is a factor of boys and girls. So if you're a very strong boys team and don't have any girls on it, you're never going to score in the overall competition. And so getting to that inclusivity about everyone participates, we realized that cycling does require equipment, and we have a couple programs in place to ensure that no one is left out because of a lack of access to gear. And those programs range from at the team level. We encourage teams to partner with local bike shops and do what we call a Lycra drive, basically take donations at the shop, because, you know, most communities have older cyclists who are buying new bikes, and what do they do with their old bike? You know, it sits in the garage. Well, you can donate it. We're a nonprofit. There's tax deductions available to you. So we get a lot of donated equipment. We also have teams who do fundraising and then buy entry-level bikes through their local bike shop and create a loaner fleet of bikes. And then at the league and national level, we have a scholarship program called the Booster Club. And so we seek donations from, you know, corporations, grants, as well as just individuals who want to contribute, who believe in our cause. And last year, through the Booster Club, we provided $165,000 in scholarships across the country to get, just to your point, to enable kids to participate and, you know, really get them involved.
I'm speaking with Austin McInerney. He is the executive director of NICA, the National Interscholastic Cycling Association, which is expanding rapidly, and I'm very pleased to hear that. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist. I want to talk a little bit about the coaches' training, because I think that the people who begin to mentor these kids are really important. So is it a teacher or a phys ed or parents? Who's involved in this?
Yeah, it can be one or some combination of all of that. Like when I coached the Berkeley High team, you know, I just lived in the community. I was not associated with the high school at all. But I obviously have a lot of experience in cycling. I had this sort of mentality where I, you know, and patience to work with kids that were learning the sport. And so, you know, I approached the school and said I want to volunteer my time to do this. And the school was, you know, more than happy to have folks from the local community that were successful in their professional lives get involved. And so, you know, I had to do a background check because I was working with youth. I had to do some training, wilderness first aid, CPR. And after I had jumped through these simple hurdles, you know, I was an unpaid guest sort of instructor on campus, and I ran the club. Now, a lot of parents get involved as coaches because they have a son or daughter that they ride with, or that, you know, they want their son or daughter to have that experience to learn how to ride safely, and so they volunteer their time. And what we've done at the national level is create a training program that really gives folks who want to volunteer the skills that they need to successfully run a club and keep it safe and keep it fun. And so that's really what our coaching program fundamentally is about. It's not about, you know, how to, you know, learn about heart rate monitors,
sure,
and how much watts a kid can put
right
out. You know, it's kids will get strong
right
if they continue to ride. What's important is teaching the skills. So we have a very focused program working with A potential guest for you in the future is a guy named Lee McCormick out of Boulder, Colorado.
Oh, I'd love to talk
with
him.
Yeah, Lee's a skills guru and has helped us develop MTB 101, which is helping coaches or adults learn how to teach kids. You know, there's a lot of very skilled cyclists, but if you ask them, well, how do I turn? They say, just do it or follow me.
Right, follow me.
You know, and that doesn't work necessarily with a 14 or 15-year-old who's really nervous about being on the bike. And so we've developed this curriculum, and it's described in detail on our website. And we have these weekend sessions that we call Leaders Summits, where coaches or people who want to become coaches attend and have fun with fellow coaches. And, you know, I just did this past weekend up in Wisconsin. We had 41 individuals come out for the weekend.
Wow.
And now those people are energized and off to start clubs at schools within that state. We'll see where it goes in the next year there, but I imagine that a year from now, if I'm on the show, I'll be telling you that there's a couple hundred kids from a couple dozen schools in Wisconsin that are all riding their bikes.
Boy, that would be awesome. That is awesome. So I do want to talk about, before I let you go, there is a grant program, which is what reminded me to get back to NYCHA. And that is Dick's Sporting Goods is offering a matching grant of $75,000. And I saw just before the show that you've raised already a good portion of that, but there's more to go and not too many weeks. Tell us a little bit about the grant and why Dick's is involved and what this is all about and how perhaps our listeners can get involved too if they like.
Yeah, thank you very much. This is a unique opportunity, unprecedented for us. As I said, we're a nonprofit. Our ability to grow and respond to the growing demand for organized high school cycling programs is solely dependent on our ability to raise money right now. We are not trying to put the cost on the shoulders of the participants. You know, volunteers are making teams happen, and so we need to do everything in our power to reduce the cost of participating in this sport. And Dick's is a national sporting goods store. They have a foundation called Sports Matter, and they came out with a program, this matching grant. And so based on the scale of our efforts and the potential for growth, they offered us up to $75,000. The hitch here, though, is that to get that money, we have to raise that amount. And it's a all or nothing. If we do not meet the deadline of May 23rd and raising $75,000 by then we lose all the pledges. So we have just under a month. We're in, 2 weeks into this fundraising campaign, and we have 80 individuals who stepped up to make pledges. The way this works right now is they have a website. You go onto that website. They don't actually charge your credit card until May 23rd.
Sure.
If and only if we meet that $75,000. So right now, we have about 80 people that have pledged, and we're 50% of the way to that goal. And
wow, so that's awesome.
Yeah, so I'm really hopeful, with putting the word out here, and I'm hoping that some folks will step up. I really want to see our number of backers go out the roof here. And so if you're interested in joining us and making a pledge, just go to our website. It's very easy. It's nationalmtb.org. And right there on our homepage, right in the left hand, you can't miss it, $75,000 in 5 weeks. And if you're interested in following our efforts, we have a pretty big following on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, where a lot of the kids are really posting pictures from events around the country.
Oh, that would be fun.
Yeah, you should definitely check us out. And our handle is at NationalMTV. You can follow us there on Twitter or Instagram. And check us out on Facebook. And then if you're interested, from wherever you're listening right now, on our website is a list of all the leagues that currently are in existence with links to their programs. And so, like I said, we have 13 leagues now underway in 12 states. We're estimating about 4,000 students will participate this year. And just think, if this is where we've gotten in 4 years, where will we be in 40 years? Hundreds of thousands of kids participating in my dream. So I'm hoping to make that reality here.
I hope it happens. I think it's an awesome program. Let me ask you one last question. Any plans for a league here in Ohio?
Well, that's a great question. You know, I've just been here in Columbus this morning and we'll spend the rest of the day. We're going to tour some bike shops. I'm dropping off copies of our film. It's called Single Track High. It's a documentary that follows six student athletes through the NorCal League.
Oh, nice.
2 years ago. I highly encourage folks to check this out. It's just under an hour long, real high-quality documentary. We've done over 70 screenings around the country. And it's the kind of thing, I mean, 10 out of 10 kids that watch this, when they're done, they say, I want a club. I want to start doing that. And you can order the DVD online from our website. So I'm dropping those off at some local shops, hoping they'll do showings or maybe show them on their TV in the shop to get some seeds planted. And I know there are some individuals here in Ohio that have been talking with us. You know, they're interested in what the steps are. So, you know, I'm pretty confident here, and probably in the next year or two, yeah, there's a good chance that something will be happening here. But again, we look for locals. We don't just parachute in and make this happen. We look for locals on the ground, and our goal is to help each league become financially sustainable and you know, provide jobs to people to help put these programs on. And it takes time. You know, it definitely takes, you know, think about it. Cycling as a high school sport is new, and it takes some investment so that you can get to a place like where SoCal and NorCal and Colorado and now Utah. You know, Utah's our fastest growing league. They just finished their second year, and they have over 600 students participating, and, you know, the sky's the limit there. So,
well, and then maybe some of these students can go on and ride in college, and that's what. It's a feeder program for places like Marion University.
It's amazing now. So we work closely with Fort Lewis College out of Durango. They have many kids from our programs that are gone to college. They become a destination. Lee McRae is another big school. If you look at the collegiate national championship results, I think there's like 70 or so schools that were fielding students. And so our program is a feeder into the collegiate ranks in a big way. And schools that are really pursuing cycling programs are recognizing that, and they're providing scholarship opportunities, and that's great. You know,
it is great.
I'm looking for more kids to go into college for sure. Either, I don't know if you picked up, I call our participants student-athletes for a reason. I mean, they're students, and they can go far with cycling, and it's one of the few sports that you can do well into your later years.
And plus, you do not have to be really tall, really big, really fat. You can just be who you are and ride a bike.
Well said.
Thanks, Austin. I appreciate it. Enjoy your stay here in Ohio. And we will definitely check back and see if you guys got your grant. That'll be so exciting.
Thank you so much for having me on the show.
My pleasure.
All right. Ride safely.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Austin McInerney joined me from his friend's house in Columbus. He is on his way to the southern part of the country to open up a new cycling league. What an interesting conversation. He's so enthusiastic. If you are interested in the Dick's Sporting Good Challenge, as he said, log on to their website. You can see what all these young kids are doing on bicycles. That's all we have time for this evening. Thank you so much for listening to The Outspoken Cyclist. We will be back next week with a brand new show. Ride safe. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Lees. We'll be back next Saturday evening from 5:30 to 6:30 here on WJCU 88.7 FM and streaming live on the internet at WJCU.org. Don't forget, this show is available as a downloadable podcast also at WJCU.org, and we're on Facebook at The Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and we'll see you next week.